All right, this is Todd Blackhurst here, back with Taichung Expat Talks, and I'm really happy today to have my friend Sean Bettinson on the program. Sean?
Thanks for inviting me, Todd. It's great to finally meet you.
Yes, I know.
We've been chatting quite a bit on Facebook and that over the last couple of years, but finally get a chance to actually have coffee. And
I know, it's really wonderful. Thanks for coming on the show, and we're going to find out all about each other. Well, mainly about you, unfortunately.
Sure.
It's my show.
It's your show, but the spotlight's on me.
That's right. So, hey, why don't you start out and just, for our listening audience, introduce yourself a little bit.
Okay, sure. So, yeah, my name's Sean. I'm originally from the UK. You might be able to tell from my accent, it's not exactly quite a UK accent. I've lived in a few different places. Lived in Ireland before I came here for a couple of years. Got a bit of a twang. And I've lived in Taiwan for 13 years, and living in Taiwan, you have to speak a little bit slower. So, you know, it's and teaching American style English, you've got a real mix of an accent there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've been in Taiwan for 13 years. Done quite a few different things here. Done teaching, ran a couple of businesses, worked in probably the most bizarre job is maybe working out in a factory in Lugang as a sales manager.
It's like,
yeah, most of the time when people come into the factory, they think I'm the boss. It's like, no, I'm the sales manager. It's like, but white European people don't work in this kind of industry. It's like, well, they do now. Yeah, and I think if people have seen my name around town, they're probably associated with two things. Either one, Hackstrong, a charity that I'm currently heading up, which helps people from the international community when they're in a bit of a crisis.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in just a moment.
Yep, and then the other thing is I'm a little bit of an advocate for air quality in Taiwan. So I have a business which actually sells an air pollution monitor called the Laser Egg, and I have a deal with 3M to provide purifiers, and we sell masks. It's like, as a cyclist here and being involved in the cycling industry for a lot of years, got a lot of friends who suffer with allergies and the problems here, and you know, a couple of friends and I decided to invest in a small business to bring some awareness to that. And I think that's what that product that we sell does most is shows you the problem, especially in your house.
Right. So now that you brought that up, let's just go ahead and jump right into it.
Go ahead.
Sean, what is going on in Taiwan with the air quality? I think for a lot of the foreign population, we maybe especially for those people who have just moved here recently, you open your windows. Maybe you live in a tall building, maybe you don't. You go outside, you want to take your kids to the park, and you look up and you think, wow, it's kind of foggy today.
Yeah.
But it's not fog.
No, it's not fog. It's pollution. And by the pollution, Taiwan's pollution problem is mostly made up of particulate matter, which is really fine microscopic particles that are in the air. And if you get enough of them in one particular cubic meter of air, then that's when you start to see that fog element that makes it look quite misty. That's something that we discovered while we were cycling. We used to ride cycle out to Darken here every morning.
Yeah.
And my business partner, she had childhood asthma and hasn't suffered with it for many years. Suddenly riding up one of the hills, she just stops and she's going purple in the face.
Oh,
and it's
my goodness.
What is that? It's this lovely morning mist. It's actually not the morning mist. We discover it's air quality. It's this PM2.5.
Wow.
Breathe it in, it gets stuck in your lungs, causes all sorts of problems, lung cancer, strokes. The problem is you're not going to really see any problem like that until it happens, when it doesn't happen immediately.
Yeah.
Only if you're like me, you're sensitive to it, you're going to cough and sneeze, then you're going to notice it.
Yeah.
Most people just go about it unaware.
Yeah, this past weekend I was in Hualien.
Yes.
And actually drove the cross mountain, highway, freeway.
Oh, so you got to see not the sea of clouds, but the sea of dirt.
Well, I did see the sea of clouds on the far side coming over.
Yeah.
And then when you get to Huashan and come over, literally, it's this massive change in the air quality. You can see it.
Yep.
So what can we do to protect ourselves?
Well, the first thing you can do is, like most people, when you're out and about, walking around, or you're on a scooter or a bicycle, wear a good anti-pollution mask. Now, don't buy those masks that everybody's wearing that you see around town.
7-Eleven masks.
The 7-Eleven masks, yeah. I mean, they're great if you've got a cold and you don't want to pass it on and you want to be socially conscious.
Yeah.
But they do not filter air pollution at all.
Okay, so what are we 0%. Looking for? Yeah, what are we looking for?
You're looking for any kind of mask that forms a good seal around your face.
Okay.
So, you know, a shameless plug, but I sell a mask that's from the UK called Respiro. I've personally used it for years before I got here. Before I started selling them, and they're great. But you know, you can, if you don't want to fork out for something like that, 3M make a really good mask. Doesn't look particularly great when you're wearing it, but it definitely does the job. And there's a whole plethora of masks out there that do form a good seal on your face. But make sure that it does form a seal. There's no gaps under your chin. There's no gaps down the side of your nose, and you're gonna get the best filtration possible. So that's outside.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest problem is most people, you'll see it, they'll come home and they're wearing a mask and they're like, okay, I'll take off the mask and I go sit in my living room, or I go to my office, or I go to my school. But the problem is that the pollution that's outside is also inside.
Yeah.
It's the same level, pretty much the same, sometimes worse.
Right.
If you don't run some kind of air purifier. And I have to point this out, that if you turn on the air conditioner, an air conditioner does not filter the air.
Right.
The air conditioner makes the dirty air cold. That's all it does. You actually have to have some kind of air purifier with a proper filter in it.
Right.
To filter it.
Yeah.
So to protect yourself, those are the two things. And of course, you know, I've got this product, this laser egg that actually tells you how well the air is, how well your air purifier is doing.
Yeah.
But the main thing is it can, if you use something like that, like if you use a personal air monitor, you can see when is a good day to open the window. Do I need to turn on the air purifier today?
Right.
Looking at the app that the government, like the data the government gives you, I think a lot of it is, it's not real-time data.
Right.
If you go to Taiwan's EPA's official website, I'll provide a link in this podcast if you want.
Yeah, please.
But you can see in the bottom right-hand corner in red writing, it shows you that the PM2.5 calculation in Taiwan is done on a rolling 12-hour basis.
Right.
So it's a rolling 12-hour average that's updated every hour. And when you look at that, naturally, if the previous 12 hours have been a bit cleaner, then the number's going to be lower.
Yes.
So today, a perfect example is if you look at the app, it might be, you know, 93. And, you know, if you take out this laser egg, it's actually 150.
Wow.
What is going on at the moment.
Yeah, right.
So that... I don't want to call it a discrepancy, but that difference in the number could make you, you know, rethink about
your
what
plans.
Exactly you're going to do, your plans.
Yeah, exactly.
What are you going to do? Like, shut the windows would be a good idea and turn on an air purifier.
Right. Okay, thanks for clarifying all of that.
Sure.
Let's talk a little bit about the Hackstrong charity, because this is something a lot of foreigners probably don't really understand or know much about.
Okay, so Hackstrong. In a nutshell. So
what's the name? First of all, tell us the name. What does it mean?
Oh, Hackstrong. So Hackstrong comes from the guy who founded the charity. His name is Greg Haxton, and it's a play on his surname.
Sure, yeah.
So he was involved in a pretty serious motorbike accident back in 2011, and he was on death's door. Like,
wow.
When it happened, his friends were called to the hospital, his girlfriend, and they said, he has either hours to live, maybe days, if he's lucky. And because he was so well known in the community in Kaohsiung, everybody kind of came together. He used to run one of the most popular bars in Kaohsiung. And he's one of these people, when you meet him, the best way I could describe Greg is, you meet Greg and he makes you feel like you're the only person in the world when he talks to you.
Mm-hmm.
And he just has that natural affinity to befriend people.
Right.
So everybody loved him. And then he was this pillar in the community, and to see him lying in hospital in this horrible way.
Right.
One guy came up with the idea, it's like, let's take his name and, you know, Hackstrong, the strength of becoming better. And that's
right.
Where the name came from.
Yeah.
So it was all his friends really that founded it. Like he was laying in hospital unconscious for 2 months.
Wow.
So once he recovered from that, and it was a long process, he decided he wanted to keep the movement going to help other people in that situation.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just helping everybody. I think it's really focused on helping people, foreigners, people from the international community that are living here, that when you get into trouble, you don't have family and close relatives and things by to help out. And you may not understand the system and what's going on. maybe your parents have to fly here. It's a mess. It's a
horrific
crisis.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
And I think Hackstrong has got the experience to help guide you through that. Mm-hmm. You know, offering emotional support, just offering general like encouragement. Mm-hmm. And we've done some fundraising in the past as well.
Yeah. So if someone finds themselves in a crisis, how do they get in touch? Website, Facebook?
Most people, like a lot of times what happens is something happens and to somebody in the community, and then it kind of gets shared in the different groups on Facebook. And at some point, if they haven't already contacted Hackstrong, either my name or Greg's name gets mentioned in a comment, or they refer to Hackstrong, and that's where it comes.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can go to the website, you can go to Facebook, you can contact us directly, and we get back to you really quickly and talk to you about what it is you're having a problem with.
Brings up a really good point. I conduct through Taichung Expat, I conduct a survey every year. And one of the things that has been incredibly surprising to me, maybe it shouldn't be so surprising to me, but I find every year that the number of people who respond in the survey who don't have a driver's license, don't carry insurance, that kind of thing is, to in my opinion, high.
It is, yes.
And so it's, and you know, driving here, living your life here, comparatively to at least where I'm from, is dangerous.
Yes.
You can, in an instant, find yourself hit by a scooter, in a scooter accident, in a car accident, a victim of circumstances with a disease in the hospital. And yes, healthcare here is relatively inexpensive compared to a lot of our home countries, but you know, what kind of advice would you give to people who think, oh, I don't need to worry about that?
Well, I think your point falls into two categories. Is we talk first about health insurance. And most people, if you're here, if you're a foreigner, you're working in Taiwan, most people are here legally. They have a work permit, which gives them an ARC, which gives them a national health card.
Right.
Now, that's great. If you get into an accident, most of the stuff that's going to happen to you is going to be covered.
Right.
It depends on the seriousness of the accident and what kind of treatment you need. So most of the experience that we've got comes from people having accidents, falling off scooters mainly. Because most foreigners here are riding a scooter or a motorcycle, and you get hurt, say you break your leg, two things happen. Maybe you need to get it put back together.
Right.
So they perform surgery on it. They're going to give you two choices at the hospital. You know, maybe several. They'll say, you know, we can give you surgery A, which is free under the National Health Act. This is my own personal experience. I broke my collarbone.
Okay.
You know, and they gave me two options. They said, you can... Basically, we'll stitch it back together with wire. Cool. How much does that cost? That's free. It's done. Yep, fine.
Right.
Or you can have this plate put in.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, okay, so how much is... What's that? And they said, well, the plate is 58,000 Taiwan dollars.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that would be a better reconstructive surgery.
Right.
But that's 58,000 out of my pocket.
Yeah.
And also, at the same time, if you're... most people who are working here as a teacher or anything, if you're not working, you're not teaching, you don't get paid. There's no, sick pay... So, you know, I was off work for a month.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you look at 58,000 for that plus a month's loss of earnings.
Right.
You've got to pay your rent and everything. The bills start to stack up.
Yeah.
So what we're trying to do with Hackstrong is to make people aware that you can actually get private health insurance here.
Yes, that's right.
Now, I'm from England. If you hear private health insurance people, most people run a mile because they go, oh, God, that's going to cost a fortune. It's something that my parents have.
Yeah.
But it's actually not expensive. Like, we work with an insurance agent here. She speaks great English. And you can get policies from as little as 2,000 NT a month.
Yeah.
And if you take out one of those... That selective surgery of the 58,000 I talked about, that would be covered.
Right.
If you ended up with a horrific disease, if you ended up with cancer and you decide to get treated here, mm-hmm. you don't have private insurance, it'll cost you about $1 million Taiwan dollars.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, that would be covered. All these extra things are covered. And also, while you're in hospital recovering, they will pay for a better room for you.
Right.
They will pay for, you know, some selective treatments that are not available on the NHS. And you can also take the option of having your salary covered as well.
Yeah.
So that's something that we're trying to encourage people to do.
Yeah, these are things nobody wants to really think about. But in today's society, in today's culture, especially if you're here with a partner, with a family, with children, with anybody that you're responsible for, or even thinking about the fact that your family may have to come over here and take care of you, or get you back to your home country. You know, these are things everybody really needs to, at some point, sit down and think about, have a conversation with somebody about.
Yeah, we've got. I mean, if you take out an insurance policy, you know, you can get international travel policies if you're not going to be here for long, and make sure that something like that does cover things like repatriation. We helped a guy back in 2016. His name was John Kelly. People in Taichung probably saw that all over Facebook.
Yeah, I remember that.
That cost a fortune. That, including the hospital bill, the medivac alone was 1.2 million Taiwan dollars. For the flight.
Oh my word.
And it's like, if you don't have anything to cover that, that comes out of your own pocket. And the you can't say, oh, you know what, can you fly him back and we'll pay you later?
Right.
You ain't got the money. You ain't getting on the plane. Right. They don't even book the plane until you've got the money.
Wow.
So you're sitting, you know, in that situation. So I think a lot of people don't think about what could seriously happen to them. But I just dread to think. I've sat at so many hospital beds where people have, you know, being in these situations, and I think if that was me and my mother had to come here, I would just be mortified.
Yeah, yeah. A little bit of a serious topic, but it's worth thinking about, because I think a lot of people don't think about it. So.
Yeah, and the other side of the card, like that we were talking about, is the driving license aspect.
Yes.
So if you, a lot of foreigners here, they drive around on a scooter, and I would say there's a good 50% or more don't have a driving license.
I would agree with that.
I would raise my hand and I would honestly say, for the first few years I lived here, I didn't have a driving license either. It was just, I don't know, young naivety, stupidity, ignorance, whatever you want to call it, you know. But eventually, once you would try to understand, if you hit somebody and you hurt them, then if you don't have the driving license, not having the driving license is not the main issue. Like, there's a fine for that, which is about 6,000 NT, and people think that's fine, whatever. If I get caught by the cops, I don't have it. 6,000 NT is nothing.
Sure.
But if you hit somebody else, you are fully responsible for all of their care. Let's say you hit an old grandma and you crack her hip, and she needs to have reconstructive surgery and everything. That falls on you. Your insurance company will walk away.
Right.
There's no insurance. No driving license, no insurance.
Right.
You could be liable for millions of dollars.
And you're not leaving the country until that's paid, is that correct?
Don't quote me on that, but yes, pretty much. Like, they, you know, they would, if you, I'm sure if you tried to leave, there'd be a criminal injunction against you, and it would be difficult. Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, let's talk about something a little more, a little more fun, a little more light.
Yeah, sure, okay.
So you've been here for 13 years.
Yes.
That's a good amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
As an expat, living in a foreign country, you've had a good amount of time to, you know, assimilate, or maybe that's the wrong word, to take in Asian culture, Taiwanese culture.
Yes.
Do you have any things that still just get on your nerves?
I think it would boil down to, like, all of the stereotypical stuff. Like, traffic is definitely one of the things that people talk about. It's, I think, just the approach to education for traffic, for driving, teaching people how to drive, courtesy, it isn't there. So you have to blame the system in which it comes from. I always find it funny, though, because Taiwanese are so nice and so polite, and they suddenly get behind the wheel of a car, and they're just like, like, I'm going to run you down, get out of my way. You know, and it's horrible. It's, you know, but everyone, I think, is aware of that. And of course, going back to the air pollution problem, that's something that is a real, you know, I mean, I've had serious thoughts about what is my future living here.
Yeah.
And for me now, it's okay, but if I have children, I have so many people that, so many friends that have got children and just said, like, we're out, we're not staying here anymore with this air pollution problem.
Right.
So I worry the most for Taiwan, like, the driving thing is the driving thing.
Right.
That's just something you can sort of work around. You know, you could choose to walk, but you can't choose not to breathe.
Right.
And that, I think, is the thing that annoys me the most about this country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You grew up as somewhat of an expat child, what we call a third culture kid. Your father moved around a bit. You lived in several countries.
Yep.
So for those of, you know, those listeners who might be tuning in and are also family people. And you're about to get married. Congratulations, yes, by the way.
Thank you.
Have you set a date?
No, we haven't, no.
Not a date.
Just cruising, taking the time about it.
Taking your time about it, okay. So, you know, for people with kids or whatever, give us some advice as someone who has lived on one side of it as a kid, but also thinking about your own family growing up somewhat, you know, maybe also living that kind of life. What would you say to a family like mine? I'm now with kids living overseas.
Well, you know, moving to a foreign country, whether you are, you know, a child or whether you're an adult or not, it's not easy. It's a stressful experience, but it's a really enriching experience. It's, you know, the independence that you gain from living in a foreign country, from meeting and mixing with people from different cultures, I think it really rounds you out as a person. So if anybody is thinking of making the move or to move either to Taiwan or to a foreign country, expect that, yes, it's going to be difficult. But the stuff you're going to gain from that, the experiences, the people you meet, you know, the challenges you face and that you'll overcome, you would end up going back to your home country and seeing some things that people would consider a complete crisis. And you're like, are you kidding me? Like, that's so easy. I can fix that in a minute. Yeah. You know, so, yeah, I just, anybody that's thinking of doing it, it's like, just do it. Yeah, make it happen.
What's one of the things when you go back to, I guess you would consider Great Britain your home country?
Yes, it's, yeah.
When you go back there, what's one of the things that you really enjoy about going home?
I think I enjoy, this is going to sound a little silly, but I really enjoy the supermarket.
No, that doesn't sound silly at all.
You think, oh, you can go back, you know, it's so nice to see family. Of course, all those things are a given. It's great to see family.
Of course.
You know, and it's always great to just eat those things that you did when you were growing up as a kid.
Yeah.
As soon as I land in the airport, like a local airport, Newcastle Airport, there is a little bakery in the airport that sells these like pasties and pies, and I normally I greet my mom, hi mom, I love you, it's wonderful to see you, and I go immediately and buy one of those and eat it in the car. But yeah, when we go home, both me and my fiance, we enjoy going to the supermarket. Like, supermarket normally for me is like a 20-30 minute adventure, like just go and in Taiwan and buy the things and go home. But in England it draws out for like 3 or 4 hours. It's like, what are the new things that are out? What are these things to discover? Sharing it with Eileen and it's great. I really enjoy that. I think most people from England would think that was weird.
Yeah.
But living abroad, yeah.
I totally understand, actually. I do, yes.
Fill your suitcase full of all the goodies
yes,
and stuff.
That's right.
The
that's
spices right. And wondering if you're going to pay excess
it's
baggage.
It's so weird. Yeah. People ask, what are you going to bring? We fill our suitcase with all these, you know, perishable goods and bring it back, you know.
Yep.
Yes, that is so true. What's one of the strangest things that's happened to you since living here? Can you think of something?
Strangest thing? Wow. In 13 years. I'd say one of the interesting stories, this is like a Taiwan story, and I'll try and round it down. In Taiwan, when you get here, a lot of people might find the frustrations with certain things, and what my personal take on a lot of things in Taiwan is there is like a it's like the tick box theory of living. It's like the tick box theory of doing things, and this is mainly down to a bureaucratic approach to certain things. So if you want to get something done, it's like, I want to get something done, and people say, oh, that can't be done, but it can be done, it's just you're not able, they're just not willing to help or to do it. And for me, one of the most hilarious bureaucratic type stories that I have had was when I got my permanent residency in Taiwan. So in order to get your permanent residency in Taiwan, you need to have lived in Taiwan. You need to have held an ARC, an alien resident card, consecutively for 5 years with no break. You must meet the minimum tax regulations, and at the time I applied, you had to get a police criminal clearance certificate from your home country, as well as one from Taiwan and a couple of other bits and pieces. So I went ahead and prepared all of that. The most annoying one was getting that criminal record from home. I got it. I sent the application. I wrote out the application in Taiwan. I scanned it on a computer, emailed it to my mom. She printed it and she sent it with all of my documents down to the Taiwan office. And then they sent it back saying, no, you need to send the original form, not a photocopy of it.
Yeah.
So I FedExed the original copy over. We got that done. Fine. And then they said, okay, but you've written a check and we don't accept checks. You must send a postal order. So my mom had to go down to the post office and get this antiquated way of paying and paid it. She went down, we got that done, we got the documents back, fine. All the documents came to Taiwan. Then they had to translate them. I translated them, we went down to the courthouse and they said, oh, the stamp is like, you haven't translated everything on this document. I said, what do you mean?
What do you mean?
And I was like, well, this part here. I said, no, that at the bottom of the clearance certificate, there was a line that said, non-official, this is a blue line. And you have to translate that as well.
Oh my word.
As well as Romanizing it, like trying to do some kind of Chinese version of the address. Everything was ridiculous.
Oh my goodness.
So we go home, we get that done, we come back, get it stamped. Fine. Finally, after everything, all the documents are repaired, I go down to the office to get it done. Now, I don't want to name the immigration officer that I spoke to, but I said, okay, I want my APRC, go out to this back office. The guy there deals with it. Yeah. Knocked on the door, opened the door, went in, sat with this guy, and he says, okay, have you got all your documents? Yes. Went through, yes, criminal record, yes. Everything's ready. He goes, fantastic, Sean. In English, fantastic, Sean. He says, nobody can do it better than you. I said, oh, thank you. That's really nice to know. He says, now we just need to fill in the application form. So we start filling out. We're basically, he's looking for the application form.
Right.
And piles of papers on the desk like a government agent. He says, oh, well, I'm really sorry. I don't have a blank one. And he says, I would print one, but as you can see, turning to his right, the photocopying machine is in pieces. There's like an engineer working on it. It's about 200 pieces on the floor.
Right.
And he said, that's the only one that prints on the A3 piece of paper. So I said, well, look, no problem. I said, I can come back tomorrow. And he says, no, you don't need to do that. I said, well, how else are we going to do it? And he said, listen, look out the window, and the office is on Leeming Road. I said, over there. I said, I live in that building.
Right.
You could see my apartment window from the office.
Yeah.
I said, I'll come back tomorrow. No, it's fine. All right, okay. So then he goes over to the printer, and he comes back with a piece of blank paper. And he takes somebody else's application form and he puts the paper over the top of the form, their form, and he says, sign here. And I said, what?
Oh.
He says, did you sign here and I'll print it later when it's fixed.
Oh my gosh.
And my response to that was, I said, why don't you get another piece of paper and make it two in case you make a mistake? And he says, that's a good idea, Sean. And then I left it at that and came back like he phoned me about 2 weeks later, sorry to say, that my application was successful and I could come in and collect my APRC.
Wow.
And I was just like, all that bureaucratic stuff that you go over,
yeah,
and it just proves you, it's like, there is a way to do things.
There is a way.
There is a BAMFA, make BAMFA.
Yeah. Wow.
So that would be my
story.
That's my story.
That's a great story. Wow. I've got one more question I want to ask you. I ask every guest. And so, are you a religious person?
No, I'm not a religious person. People in my family are. I would say I was a spiritual person.
What does that mean to you? Tell me what that means.
What does it mean to be spiritual? I think when you look at the world, it's like you can explain a lot of things with science.
Mm-hmm.
But there are certain feelings, emotions, certain scientific chemistry, if you want to put it that way, that goes on in the body,
yeah,
that connects you in certain ways or gives you experiences. I would say that in looking at being a spiritual person, is it, if you've ever done any psychedelic drugs, that would definitely make you, you know, give you a different,
are you,
different perspective.
Are you admitting to doing psychedelic drugs?
We were all young at some point in our lives. But yeah, I think that, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's unexplained about the brain. There's a lot of things about energy, the way that animals can sense things. I don't know, I don't really know how to exactly explain it.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say there's any one power or one God controlling the universe,
mm-hmm,
but I believe that there is a certain amount of energy that exists in the universe and it works in its particular way.
Yeah.
Science may not have found a way to measure that yet.
Did you grow up in religious life, like going to church or...?
No, the only connection I really had is that there are people in my family who go to church regularly, and when I was growing up, I was in the Cubs and the Scouts,
mm-hmm,
and the Scouts were connected with the local church, and we used to go there and do the parade and things like that. And that was really the only connection I had, but I never really followed it at all.
Okay. Well, thanks for coming on the show.
Sure. Thank you, Todd.
Appreciate it. Well, for everybody listening, the links to the charity, Hackstrong, and also for the air purifier and the egg, we will post those. Yeah. And if you want to get in touch with Sean, I'll also have a link to his contact information. Maybe something he said piqued an interest in you. And so if you'd like to chat with him, we'll make it possible for you to do so. Thanks a lot.
Cool. Thank you, Todd.
Tune in for our next show.
Good. See you, bye.